إن الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله، وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له، وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله. أما بعد، last time I don't think we did much in this translation because Yasin at that time had a lot of questions, right? So we were just answering his questions, which was good. I mean, he asked good questions, but the discussion was prompting questions, it seems. So he went off asking them and tried to answer them. So now we are talking about the reasons or the causes why why there is a difference among the ulama. Okay? Why the ulama disagree about certain issues. And we said that one of the main differences is that the hadith does not reach an alim, but it reaches another alim, or is not acceptable to one alim, but to another alim. And then, for this thing, we said that this could be for a number of reasons. And the first reason is that basically that the hadith did not reach that alim. Did not reach, and we gave many examples from the Sahaba where some of them knew about something the Prophet ﷺ said or did, and others did not know. So, some of those will give a fatwa based on what they knew, and the others will give a wrong fatwa based on what they did not know. I mean, but based on their ijtihad, that they base it on matter, on other things that they know, but they do not have, they did not receive the direct evidence relevant to that matter that they were giving, that they gave the fatwa in regard to. And others had a hadith that was direct to and relevant to it. So we gave a lot of examples on this. And the second thing that we discussed was that the hadith could have reached a alim. We said this, the first thing happens to the sahaba and those after them. Like a hadith could reach Imam Malik but not Abu Hanifa, or Abu Hanifa but not Shafi'i, or Shafi'i but not Ahmad. And in fact, Ahmad is the one who probably he had the greatest knowledge of hadith, so he knew more hadith than any of them. So the likelihood that Abu Hanifa will know more hadith than Ahmad is not there. But there is a likelihood that sometimes there could be exceptional cases where there is a hadith that Ahmad missed, but Abu Hanifa did not miss. It is there. I mean, there is such a possibility. But in general, Ahmad was the most knowledgeable of hadith, followed by Malik, who made the Muwatta, followed by Shafi'i, followed by Abu Hanifa. And in terms of derivations based on the hadith, it seems that Imam Shafi'i was more knowledgeable about how to make conclusions from the hadith than any of the other three. Than all other three. And Abu Hanifa was strongest in argument than all four of the other three. So each one had his merit. Imam Malik was lived in Al-Madina where the Prophet ﷺ lived. So he was able to access a lot of the inheritance that was still available among the people, 150 or 200 years after the Prophet ﷺ, so that he could see how people are practicing, still inheriting from their parents and grandparents the way that the Prophet ﷺ used to practice. But it seems that the Imam Shafi'i was the closest, both in the last two, Shafi'i and Abu Ahmad bin Hanbal, was closest to the Sunnah than the other two. Imam Ahmad, in that his teachings were based more on hadith. And Imam Shafi'i, even though he was not as much he did not base his derivations as much on hadith as Imam Ahmad, but he was not far behind because he benefited from Imam Ahmad and others in the knowledge of hadith. And he used to say to Imam Ahmad, who was his student, he used to tell him, "Oh Ahmad, you have more knowledge in hadith than me." So if you know of a hadith in regard to what I'm discussing, let me know of it. But Imam Shafi'i was better in his ability to derive and understand and assimilate the knowledge. And that's why, for example, Imam Al-Albani, rahimahullah, he was asked, what would you have been if you were not Salafi? And he said, I would have become Shafi'i. He said, if you have no option but to choose a madhab, which madhab would you have chosen? And he said, Shafi'i. And that is because the Shafi'i is the closest in its derivation to the Sunnah. Allahu a'lam. But as I said, I mean, you are not bound to be restricted to any of these madhahib, especially if you know a mistake in one of these madhahib, and then you are not supposed to follow it, but follow the truth. So the Sahaba and the Imams after them, the ulama and the Imams, and through the centuries, not every one of them received all the hadith of the Prophet ﷺ or knew it. And therefore, this is one of the major reasons of difference among them. The second is that some of them may have received the hadith, but they do not believe that it is authentic. They did not have the proof that it is authentic. So they heard that the Prophet ﷺ may have said this. So in that case, they would still continue giving their fatwa according to what to them is well-founded. But at the same time, they would sometimes, if they know that there is another hadith that to them they are not satisfied that it's authentic, they would say that if this hadith proves to be authentic, then I would change my opinion. I would go according to this hadith. And this has been reported from them, from all of them, especially Imam Shafi'i. This is very common in his books and statements, that he would say, my opinion is such and such, but there is a hadith that we have received and we are not satisfied with its authenticity. If it proves that it's authentic, then this would be my view on this matter. The third cause, and this is where we are still since last week, is that that they would assume that the hadith is weak because of some kind of ijtihad, like a hadith would reach a alim, and according to his ijtihad, to his judgment, this hadith is weak, but others do not agree with him as to the weakness of the hadith. And he would not have access to other narrations or other chains of narration of the hadith. And this is what we were discussing over the last time and part of the time before, as I said. And he says there are some reasons for this, among which is that the one who narrates the hadith would believe. The two ulama that, let's say we're talking about two cases, two scholars, two ulama. One of them accepted the hadith, the other rejected it. One of them, according to his judgment, this hadith is acceptable. The other, according to his judgment, this is not acceptable. Now, the reason for this difference in judgment is that the first one of these two ulama would know something about, would consider one of the narrators of the hadith that it reached him, to be weak. The other will not consider him weak, but rather he would consider him trustworthy. And then in this case, we talked about this in detail. And it could be that the one who considered the narrator to be trustworthy was right, or the one who considered him untrustworthy could be right in some cases. So one of them would have, whoever was right would probably have some additional knowledge that enabled him to have the correct opinion in this case. This is a subject, as he says, Ibn Taymiyyah, this is a wide subject that is mostly discussed in the books of Ilm al-Rijal, the books that deal with the subject of evaluating the narrators and telling you who is trustworthy and who is trustworthy. So a lot of these differences can be actually settled if you go to bring all the narrations in Ilm al-Rijal about each narrator, because each narrator we have his biography now, and it's well documented. So if you bring all their statements and all their discussions of each narrator together, you can probably eliminate most of the differences that are of this time. And this is where we stopped last time. Now, the next thing, منها ألا يعتقد أن المحدث سمع الحديث مما حدث عنه وغيره يعتقد أنه سمعه لأسباب توجب ذلك معروفا. Now these are related. But one case we said, these two ulama. We have Alim A and Alim B. Alim A accepts narrator, let's call the narrator X. Alim A accepts him. Alim B rejects him. Alim A accepts him because he considers him trustworthy. Alim B rejects him because he considers him untrustworthy. And each one has reasons for what he considers. It's not like, you know, I don't like him, I don't like his name, the way it sounds, or something like this. No. They have reasons. One of them says, for example, I have heard that in such and such situations he acted in such and such way. The other says, huh? Yeah, for example, or he was a Shia and he has, you know, weakness in his aqidah or Mu'tazili or whatever. And the other says, no, you are wrong, because what you heard from him, that you saw that he had tashayyu, he was Shia, actually he was only defending the Ali radiallahu anhu and his family in front of people who were attacking them. So he was really not Shia, he was basically defending the Sunnah. So anyways, I mean, it could be such a difference in between the two items, A and B, regarding X. The other possibility, or second possibility, is that still Alim A, they still both reject, it's still in regard to X. One of them accepts him, the other rejects him. This will accept him because in the chain of narrations, he says, X says that I heard from Y that the Prophet ﷺ said, or from Y, from Z, etc. So in his chain that he narrates the hadith, according to him, there is interruption in the chain. This is complete. According to B, there is interruption. So according to them, he says, I don't believe that, there's no way that X could have heard from Y. Because X used to live, let's say, in Medina, and Y used to live in Iraq, and this never traveled to Medina, and this never traveled to Iraq, so how could they have met? And how could he report from him? Or when this guy died, this was still 5 years old. So how could he report from, how could a 5 year old report something that he learned from somebody who died when he was at that age? That's not possible. Something like this. So he says, there's no chance, according to B, there's no chance that X can report from Y. According to A, he says, no, he can report because, and then he brings another proof. He says, actually, when he died, Y, X was actually 7 years old. And at that time, he not only narrated from him, he actually finished memorizing the Quran. So how can he not be able to memorize? Something like this, you know. Or he says, actually, he did not live all his life in Iraq, but for some period of time he moved to Medina, and there is a proof of this, and so on. So there would be this kind of difference in views. So one of them would not believe that the muhaddith, the narrator, has heard the hadith from those from whom he is narrating, whereas others would believe, the other A would believe that he heard it. ومنها, and another possibility is that أن يكون للمحدث حالان. X, the narrator, could have two situations. Two situations, حالان. حال استقامة وحال اضطراب. Sometimes he is good in his narrations, and other times he is confused in his narrations. His narrations are not straight. How could this happen? مثل أن يختلط, like a person who becomes what, senile, you say, after when he gets to old age, he becomes senile. So before he was at that stage, he was good in his narrations. After that, you cannot take narrations from him. So if he tells you something that he heard from Y, after he became senile, even though he studied from Y, and we know that they have met for sure and so on, but still, we cannot accept what he narrated from Y after he was senile. Before that, we can accept it. Or someone whose books were burnt. Ibn Lahia, a very famous narrator, he used to write the hadith. And at some stage of his life, his library was burnt. And the books that he used to record in were lost. So he started narrating just from his memory. And a lot of times what he narrated was weak. So if his narration was before, if you can prove, sometimes you cannot prove, but if you can prove that the narration was before the burning of his library, then this is acceptable. If it was after, it is not acceptable. If you are not sure, then you have to be on the safe side and say he's weak. Ibn Lahia is weak. You cannot take from him unless you prove. And how do you prove? How do you prove if it was before or after? There are people that report from him that they only met him after his library was burnt. Others, they met him when his library was, before his library was burnt. So you can tell based on the one who is telling from him, narrating from him. And there are some other things that help you to tell when this happened. But anyways, A would, or this guy X would have two situations, a situation where he's acceptable, another situation where he's not acceptable. So whatever he reports while he is acceptable, is acceptable, otherwise it is weak. Whereas, so according to B, he says, I cannot take from him, because this guy was confused at certain period of his time. So I cannot take this hadith because I don't know. It is to me, this hadith is weak. Yeah? So he says, فَلَا يُدْرَى ذَلِكَ الْحَدِيثُ مِنْ أَيِّ نَوْعَيْنِ. He says, I'm not sure whether this hadith is before he was confused or after he was confused. But to A, وَقَدْ عَلِمَ غَيْرُهُ أَنَّهُ مِمَّا حَدَّثَ بِي فِي حَالِ الْإِسْتِقَامَةِ. And the other one, A, he knows that this hadith he reported when he was sure of what he was reporting, when he was still, trustworthy. He has proof that, yeah, this was early in his life, or before his books were burnt, or before he became senile. So in that case, even though, I mean, if this has proof, then he is right and this is wrong. But this has excuse that he wanted to take the safe approach and not take a hadith that he has doubt about. وَمِنْهَا أَنْ يَكُونَ الْمُحَدِّثَ قَدْ نَسِيَ ذَلِكَ الْحَدِيثِ فَلَمْ يَذْكُرْهُ فِي مَا بَعْدِ أَوْ أَنْكَرَ أَنْ يَكُونَ حَدَّثَ بِهِ مُعْتَقِدًا أَنَّ هَذَا عِلَّةٌ تُوجِبُ تَرْكَ الْحَدِيثِ ويرى غيره أن هذا مما يصح الاستدلال به والمسألة معروفة. He says, and it could be that the narrator forgot that hadith. He reported it at a certain stage and then he forgot it. So he did not report it afterwards. Or he would even deny that he ever narrated it. So to one of the two scholars, ulama of fiqh, to one of them, he will say, this means that he is not trustworthy. I would not take anything from him. To the other, he says, no, this is not enough cause to drop his narrations. And he says, this is a well-known matter among the narrators, which means this happens sometimes that, you know, X would say, okay, he will report a hadith, he will tell you something, and then later on, he will, I wish he gave an example of this, because there are examples, maybe he'll give them later. He will tell you of something, and then later on, not necessarily the second day, maybe in a month or two, or a year or two, or 5 years, you will ask him about the same thing, and he says, I told you. He said, yes, remember we were, he said, I never said this, I even never heard of it. I never heard anybody say it, and it's he who told you.
No question of senility there, right?
No, not senility, but he forgot. So the two, this guy A, he would say, that's understandable, this happens sometimes, and I would still take from him his narrations. The other say, no, if this happened to him, that means that he's unpredictable, and I can never take anything from him. So this could happen sometimes. And this happened even with Umar radiallahu anhu, something like this. You know, a Sahabi like Umar, you do not expect something like this to happen. But it happened, and I don't know, I think in this book he brings it sometime later, but maybe not, maybe in some other book. It's authentic, Allahu anhu, as far as I remember. That once they were traveling, he and some other companions, and then he became junub. He had to take a bath. So then they had no water. So he asked the companions, what should I do? Or, yeah, he didn't know what to do. And he asked the Sahaba, and one of the Sahaba told him, oh, Amir al-Mu'mineen, don't you remember when we were once traveling and the same thing happened to you, you had to take a bath, and you did not have water, so فَتَمَرَّغْتَ فِي التُّرَابِ تَمَرُّغَ الْبَعِيرِ, which means you just rolled in sand, like a camel would roll in sand, to clean himself. And he thought maybe that's what he should do. And then when you came to the Prophet ﷺ, he told you it would have sufficed you to do this, and, you know, ضَرْبَةٌ لِلْكَفِّ, ضَرْبَةٌ لِلْكَفِّ, لِلْوَجِهِ وَالْكَفَّيْنِ. You hit one time, and this is enough for your face and your two hands. That's it, which means tayammum. It would have sufficed you to make tayammum. You did not have to roll all your body in the sand. So he told him, don't you remember when this happened? And you came to the Prophet ﷺ and told you that you should do this? And he said, no, I don't remember. So it could be, I mean, even though this doesn't seem to be a very possible frequent occurrence among people, but maybe, you know, in every person's history, this happened once or twice in his life, that, you know, something happens with you, and then afterwards, you do not remember it at all. You know, and I remember, you know, in my case, you know, sometimes, you know, my kids, for example, they tell me, do you remember that, you know, on such and such date when we were in that, living in such and such house, and such a thing happened, and you said such and such, or you did such and such. I say, no, I don't remember at all. I don't, you know, this is totally gone from my memory. Maybe it's still there, maybe if...
It's still there, but it's just deep. You can't recall it. Yeah, it seems illogical to deem somebody untrustworthy, because then by that logic you could say that everybody's untrustworthy, because this is human error.
Right.
Human beings are the ones who are narrating this.
Right. But it seems that some people use this as a criteria, and others refuse to accept it. And among also the reasons for this is that many of the Hijaziyin, many of the people lived in Hijaz. Hijaz is the Western Arabia, part of what is Saudi Arabia now, which includes Mecca and Medina and the surrounding areas. So many of the people of Hijaz, يرون ألا يحتج بحديث عراقي أو شامي إن لم يكن له أصل بالحجاز. They used to believe that you cannot accept a hadith from a person who lived in Iraq or Sham unless he has an origin from Hijaz. So if somebody is in Hijaz, you know, it's discrimination based on location.
Geographically.
Right. So until one of them said, نزلوا أحاديث أهل العراق منزلة أحاديث أهل الكتاب لا تصدقون ولا تكذبون. One of them said, consider the hadith reported by somebody from Iraq like a hadith of Ahl al-Kitab, people of the book, which means do not say that it is a lie, do not say it is true. Yeah. Keep it like that, hanging, suspended.
The people of what?
Iraq.
Iraq.
Iraq, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're just saying now?
No, those times, what he means, because you know the Sahaba and then the people after them, the Tabi'in, Tabi'in, and so on, they moved to different parts of the Muslim world. Some of them were in Egypt, some of them were in Iraq, some of them were in Sham. And those who were in Sham,
It wasn't called Iraq then, right? It wasn't called Iraq.
Yeah, it was called Iraq. So.
Just the lines are new.
The lines are new, but the area is called Iraq. Yeah, it does not necessarily contain the exact same cities and parts that it does now, but the general area, even Iran was not there.
Okay.
So Iraq included parts of Iran, what is known now as Iran.
Yeah, Iran was...
And it extended also further north to include some more parts of
Turkey
or even Russia or somewhere. So that general area is called Iraq. So anyways, they say do not accept from them. Why? Because maybe they are like students who learned from teachers who were in Iraq, and the teacher was learned from Sahabi who moved to Iraq. So to them it's not acceptable. It must be, you must have learned something, your knowledge, from somebody who was in Hijaz. It's not acceptable to take it from those people.
But I just feel like that today.
Yeah, maybe to some degree you find something.
If you study in America,
you're not acceptable, right. And another one of them, he was told, Sufyan and Mansur and Ibrahim and Alqaman Abdullah bin Mas'ud Hujjah. They gave him a narration, and it is a very strong narration. Of all of them are trustworthy, very acceptable narrators. They said Sufyan, from Mansur, from Ibrahim, from Alqama, from Abdullah bin Mas'ud. And Abdullah bin Mas'ud is one of the Sahaba who moved to Kufa, and he remained in Iraq. And I think he died in Iraq, radiallahu anhu. So he said, Hujjah, is this acceptable? He said, إِلَّمْ يَكُنْ لَهُ أَصْلٌ بِالْحِجَازِ فَلَا. If this does not have an origin in Hijaz, then I do not accept it. And this is because they use وَهَذَا الْاَعْتِقَادِهِمْ أَنَّ أَهْلَ الْحِجَازِ ضَبَطُ السُّنَّةِ. Because they believed, some of those people, that the people of Hijaz have controlled or well established or well understood the Sunnah. فَلَمْ يَشُذَّ عَنْهُمْ مِنْهَا شَيْءٍ. So that none of the Sunnah was missed by them. They had all the Sunnah with them, and there's no need to go and find a hadith anywhere else. It is all with the people of Hijaz. وَأَنَّ أَحَادِيثَ الْعِرَاقِيِّينَ قَدْ وَقَعَ فِيهَا اضْطِرَابٌ أَوْجَبَ التَّوَقُّفَ عَنْهَا. And that the narrations of the people of Iraq have become confused, so you should stay away from them. And also some of the people of Iraq, يَرَى أَنْ لَا يَحْتَجَ بِحَدِيثِ الشَّامِيِّينَ. They used to believe that you cannot accept the hadith of the people of Sham. And Sham means Damascus, the general area of now Jordan, Iraq, Jordan, Lebanon, Syria, and Palestine. This is general.
What? That was all
Sham. Yeah, that's considered Sham. وَإِنَّ كَانَ أَكْثَرُ النَّاسِ أَتَرِكْتُ لَيْكِ بِهَذَا فَمَتَا كَانَ إِسْنَا جَيْدَ كَانَ حَدِيثُ حُجَّةٍ. Which means most people, would not take this kind of opinion. That they would say somebody is weak because he's from Iraq or from Sham or somewhere else. As long as the hadith is good and it's not, then it is acceptable, whether it is from Hijaz or Iraq or Sham or otherwise, or like Egypt or wherever. وَقَدْ صَنَّفَ أَبُو دَوُودِ السِّجِسْتَانِي رَحِمَ اللَّهِ. Abu Dawood Sijistani, the author of Musnad Sunan Abu Dawood, he compiled a book كتابا في مفاريد أهل الأمصار من السنن. He compiled a book in which he shows which sunan each geographical location have narrated exclusively. Like there are some narrations that only the people of Iraq narrated, and they are authentic, or some of them are authentic. And similarly, some of them are only narrated by the Shamis, others the Hijazis, others the Egyptians, and so on. So he narrated, he compiled a compilation showing this, segregating the Ahadith, to show you that, what? That not all the Sunnah was found in Hijaz, because some of it spread to other parts of the Muslim world. بَيَّنَ مَخْتَصَّ بِهِ أَهْلُ كُلُّ مِنْسُمْ مِنْ الْأَمْصَارِ مِنْ السُنَّ لَكْ تُوْجَدْ مُسَلَانَ عِنْدَ غَيْرِهِمْ. Which means he showed in this book what each locality or geographical location is specialized in of the Sunan that is, you cannot find it with correct isnad or with any isnad with other geographical locations, like the people of Medina, the people of Mecca, the people of Taif, the people of Damascus, the people of Hams, the people of Kufa, the people of Basra, and so on. And there could be other reasons as well for this. So now we were talking about this. We'll stop here, inshallah. But let me summarize what I said: is that you have narrators A and B, ulama who make derivation based on the narrations, ijtihad. A and B, ulama A and B, they are using a narration from a narrator, we called him X. And A accepts X, but B rejects him. And when A accepts X and B rejects him, this causes a difference in their fatwa. Because this X has narrated something that to him is acceptable, to him is not acceptable. So he can base his fatwa on it, A can base the fatwa, B cannot. And we mentioned what reasons could be, or what causes could be, could lead A to accept this narration, but B would not accept it. So this is the third, all of this comes under the third kind of causes of difference between the scholars, what leads them to difference in their fatwa. So inshallah, next time we talk about some other things that... Number four. Cause number four.
You said what and what, how it applies to this and that. Those analytics are used in modern courtrooms heavily. And I've seen lawyers do this, and people who are trying to, you know, not just like lawyers who are like trying to win, but people who are actually inquisitory, who are trying to find and figure out the truth, is that they will actually analyze and they will draw a diagram and say, A said this to B, said this to C, said this to D, and we have a problem here. And they will actually draw these really ridiculous diagrams, and they teach you how to do this in law school.
So how?
And I'm wondering, you know, I'm thinking, you know, the more I realize that, you know, this is something that has, I guess I'm seeing where the roots have come from.
Yeah. Actually, the first item or knowledge or subject specialty of isnad and chain of narrations and verifying the chain of narrations came in Islam, among the early Muslims, to verify the authenticity of the hadith. And this is how Allah Azza wa Jalla preserved this religion for us.
Is it Abdullah ibn Umar rahimahullah who said, "Lawla isnad لَقَالَ مَنْ شَاءَ مَنْ شَاءَ"?
Yeah, exactly. Which means, if it was not for the isnad, for the chain of narrators, then anyone would have claimed whatever he wants to claim about anything. But this is what restricted it. Okay, inshallah, we stop here. Subhanakallahumma wa bihamdik. Ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk.